Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is A Vague Idea. It's a comedy trivia podcast. I'm Nate Regolia, and each week we subject our guests to a list of topics to find out if they have a vague idea. And this week we're going to be talking about stuff that you do yourself, specifically because it's an acronym that is about doing it yourself. And no, Jason, we're not talking about masturbating in a Starbucks for the last time.
It happened once. And it wasn't me.
You say that, but they stopped you midway through and you persisted to the finish line, which that's fine. Look, allegedly, I'm not even going to say that actually happened.
Allegedly. We'd like to say allegedly. We're still waiting for a court date. And yes, so allegedly. Thank you.
But yeah, we're talking about DIY. And we have two awesome returning guests. You'll know them. You'll love them. You'll remember them. Our first returning guest is a professional nose model specializing in erotic nostril work with a budget of $48 million. It's Jason Lang. Jason, welcome back.
Glad to be here. Glad to be back. Happy holidays.
Give us a little bit of that that sexy beak.
Oh, see, you know what? I mean, I'll tell you this. A lot of it's Photoshop, but if you look right here, like right here, this aquiline, this little bit right here, $37,000 of work.
Yeah. That's the thing is like, that's the part that's insured by Sotheby's, right?
Yeah. I mean, I had it replaced by the foreskin of a child from a Amazonian tribe that unfortunately had to be wiped out just to get that one foreskin.
Wow. So,
but it was worth it. It was totally worth it.
Allegedly.
I can't do shoots when it's too cold outside, but other than that, it's great.
Right. Yeah. You don't want that foreskin to shrink to a three skin, right?
I know. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
My moneymaker. Come on.
Our second returning guest is, she's an author. She's a beekeeper. She's a person who does it herself because guess what? Moms have to do that, especially in a country that doesn't supply anything for anyone. It's Laura Morrison. Laura, welcome back.
Hello. Thank you. Yep. I'm even these days, speaking of countries that are garbage, I'm even currently doing my own teaching for my children. I am homeschooling.
There you go.
So I don't know if that qualifies as DIY, but oh my goodness. It's something.
You're doing it yourself.
That's true. I am doing it. That's very true.
I feel like it's a broad acronym for a reason. It can't just be cute stuff like, oh, I made like bejeweled art. Like that's that is a form of DIY, but building a house yourself is DIY.
I've done that.
You just described like 47% of Etsy with that one sentence. So.
Allegedly, Jason. Allegedly.
Allegedly. Allegedly. Yes, that's right. Allegedly.
So let's jump into the first round, and Jason, we're going to start with you because I introduced you first, and I just feel like this is just right. The rhythm feels good tonight. The rhythm's going to get you.
Here we go.
Do you have a vague idea about Raspberry Pi?
Oh yes, it is. It is that little circuit board that kind of similar, like it's similar to like Arduino and things like that, where you can, you know, solder your own circuitry and you can program it to do various stuff. I know one thing that's really, really popular is you take it and you spend a whole lot of money on building like your own drone and then immediately fly it into a tree and then realize that the time, money, and energy you spent building it yourself could have been spent so much easier on going to Amazon for 5 seconds and just buying a drone that actually works. Because you realize that you don't have a master's degree in electrical engineering. So,
but it's the journey, right? It's the journey.
That explains, DIY. That's like, you could make a thing for a bajillion dollars and like tons of time, or you could just go buy it on Amazon for like a million less dollars. That is DIY.
Right.
You could buy a box of pre-made straws, or you could whittle your own.
You totally could. Like you want to sit there and like be kind to the environment. So instead of like going out and buying, according to y'all's rationale, is instead of going out and like buying a 10 pack of like the stainless steel kind of straws, you could go ahead and invest in a smelting operation and then just start making them yourself. Yeah. So that's easy.
Is it true, oh, yeah. Jason, that whoever smelt it dealt it?
I don't know about that, but I know whoever said the rhyme did the crime, and that actually was held up in a Supreme Court case of Diddy. Yes, he did. So yeah.
What about if the glove don't fit, you must acquit?
Clearly, and it works. That worked. Yeah. So great. Yes, that is what a Raspberry Pi is. That is, it's one of those little circuitry boards.
Excellent, Laura. Anything to add about Raspberry Pi?
Yes. Yeah. You make the crust. You put the you put the berries in the crust. You cook it, or alternately, you do the fresh berry thing with the glaze, and you just cook the pie crust. There is my answer. That is the Raspberry Pi.
I believe it's also the name of several OnlyFans accounts, but that's something different.
So. I think people sit on the pies for those, right?
Splashing. Yeah.
Is that what that's called? That's the name of it.
So I've heard from a friend.
Look, this is focus time, Jason. You can talk about this with us. You're in focus time.
No, it's that kind of goes along with the whole Starbucks thing. So I'm not really at liberty to discuss it. So
that's fair. That's fair. I understand. We got to keep it between you and your counsel. have either of you ever built one of these Raspberry Pi little computers?
No. It sounds familiar. Like my husband, he's a computer engineer, and this sounds like something that he, or maybe he intended to like just do something with the kiddos, but I don't know. It sounds, I'm aware of it in a non-pastry format, so yeah, I think he probably did something with that, but that's just a guess mostly.
Okay.
Yeah, I've never done anything like that. I have an Amazon Prime account, so I don't need it, like to buy a soldering gun and make my own computers, so I'm good.
Yeah, I know, like, because I've seen a couple of instruction sets online that are like, hey, here's how you use a Raspberry Pi to basically make like an arcade cabinet. Now, granted, you have to get like a screen and a box and all this other shit, but you can use a Raspberry Pi to emulate like pretty much all arcade games that exist from like 1980 until last year, which I think is super cool that it would be that simple to do. Now, I don't have the acumen to do it either. Like, mostly just I believe I could hook all the things up if I had very specific IKEA/Lego style instructions. but again, like, you really have to want to do it badly. Because the closest thing to this I ever did was, you remember those old like do-it-yourself science kits where you could create some sort of basic computer board by linking, wrapping wires around pegs and stuff. I had one of those when I was a kid. It couldn't calculate anything. It was mostly like, can you light up the light bulb on this end of the thing by connecting the wires? And it was like, yeah, this is cool. I understand that electricity flows through things. Now let me stick a paperclip in this wall socket.
Right. That's okay. You just cut out the middleman and take your little LED light and just jam it directly into the socket and you're fine.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Raspberry Pi it's a little computer kit made in the United Kingdom. They're on like the third or fourth version of it now. It's gone through a very long cycle of production and everything. And people have actually been able to sort of emulate the function of a MacBook, of an older MacBook with Raspberry Pis. Pretty neat. Pretty neat stuff. Raspberry Pi is also one of the most delicious pies.
It is, truly.
Because it's got the right amount of tart in it. You know, like an apple pie's trying to be tart. It's like, hey, we're going to throw some cinnamon in here because this shit's bullshit otherwise. Or are you just using Granny Smiths because they're garbage apples?
I love Granny Smiths. They're my favorite.
I mean, they're bitter. They're bitter like a grandma.
Yeah, I like bitter. I am what I eat.
There are like four farmers in Nebraska that were considering sponsoring you, Nate. Now you just lost them.
True. I know. It's cool. I've got really good customer service skills. I will get the deals back. With a little bit of high touch, it's going to be fine.
There you go.
It's all going to be fine. But yeah, and Laura, I think like it's a very Midwestern thing to like Granny Smiths, right? And honestly, here's the thing: Granny Smiths are not the worst apple. I think Granny Smiths are probably my second or third favorite apple. Like Red Delicious is easily the worst apple.
What is going on? What is this? What is this? The NPR Apple Hour?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Coming up next, we are going to discuss the history of the crab apple, how it is neither a crab nor really an apple, and with special commentary by PJ O'Rourke, Noam Chomsky, and special guest Little Yachty. So stay tuned. Thank you.
I just feel like they've been unfairly maligned, these crab apples. What about the apples that take up more resources than the others? And
depressing music playing in the background. Jesus.
Oh, man. Okay, yeah. So, Jason, 3 points. Woo! Laura, 2 points. We're going to go into round number two. Laura, do you have a vague idea about homebrew? Homebrew.
No. Well, I mean, people do it. I don't drink, nor does my husband. So, but if we did, we would be good at it, shall I say.
I have no doubt.
We would do it if we did. No, I don't know. People do it. And that's all I got. People do it.
Great. Great. Okay. People do this thing, Jason. What do you know about
homebrew? It's a thing. It's a thing that they do. Well, here you go. Because I know I'm up against my nemesis who just beat me like a redheaded stepchild in the last game. So I got to come with my A game. So homebrew, are you referring to the hobby or whatever of people who are brewing their own alcohol, typically beer or cider or anything like that? Or are you referring to the very, very popular DIY Dungeons and Dragons? Snap, that's right.
I've done that.
Oh,
man.
Bring it.
I'm going to revise my answer.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've done that.
Go ahead and look up Google again. Go ahead. Yeah, I remember
Excuse
that
me,
one too.
I'm a dungeon master. I have written my own stuff and done my own. It's very inside jokey. And
then where the hell was your answer 5 minutes ago?
I'm a very tired mother. I'll play the mom card.
And for the listener, she is using mother in the swearing parlance, not the progenitor parlance. I'm a tired mother.
But yeah, so homebrew, like I said, we refer to one of two things. Again, the creation of, you know, the brewing of beer or creating of spirits and things like that at home. Or are we referring to the D&D type of homebrew where many people, you know, real dungeon masters who remember what homebrew is, coming up with their own races, their own classes, and they're kind of DIYing their whole D&D thing. Mike, draw.
Both answers are ones that I was accepting and seeking. So, Laura, what do you want to add? What do you want to add about this, about homebrew?
Yeah, you make your own, what I've done, since I guess I have done homebrew, is you make your own little game for your players to play. And mine had a lot of unicorns and fairies because I have daughters, young daughters. It was fabulous. Things got weird because they're strange children, but I mean, that's always the case. D&D always gets weird no matter who you're playing it with. But ours is just a different, like a more glittery, sparkly kind of weird.
Oh, hell yeah. And all children are strange. Oh. So that's the other thing.
Oh, yeah.
And if you try to keep them from being strange, you create neuroses and psychoses.
Different strange.
Yeah. You create bad funnels for the strange.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they grow up and pretend to be Democrats when they're really not. So, you know, aww, those kind of people.
But man, they thumbs down with the best of them, especially when it comes to paying people living wages. Yeah, as far as the home brewing of alcohol is concerned, I've never done that. Although, and I don't know if I'm almost certain that I've told this story on the podcast before, but I don't know if I've told the two of you. There was a window of time in college where we made wine in the dorm room with the Welch's grape juice from the dorm cafeteria, combined with some brewer's yeast in a Schlitz bottle that was sealed and then tucked in the back corner of the closets in our dorm rooms. And we let it sit for pretty much like a semester, I think, and then busted them out and drank them. And they were way too sweet, but they were extraordinarily alcoholic because all of that sugar added grape juice really really fed that yeast to do amazing things.
You made prison wine.
And we were prisoners of our own stupidity, really, I think is the best way to put it. So that's the only home brewing I've ever done. And then, yeah, otherwise, like I've all the D&D campaigns I've run have been ones that I've written myself. And then I love making items. It's just a delight to make fun individual weird items, because I don't know. It really is. Once you understand kind of the mechanic of the game and you can go, hey, this thing would be way overpowered, but if I put this thing in where they have to roll a D100 to get the overpowered thing to happen, I don't know. It's just, it's really a joyous activity.
It's super fun.
I've always wanted I'm currently in a D&D campaign right now. I've always wanted to be in one, because I'll be honest, Laura, I have a lot of respect for you being a DM, because I just can't. I can't do it, because I have no
patience. All I've ever done.
I have no patience. I have none. Like, why are you people doing this? Why? It's like, there's a chest in the middle of the room. They're like, well, we're going to detect traps. There are no traps. Okay, well, we want to see if it's locked. It's not locked. Okay, we want to scan the room. Just open the damn chest!
Just open it.
I've always wanted to be in a campaign where it literally is all of like the NPC background tavern characters, like Bill, who's a human who is the associate manager of like the Golden Minotaur Tavern, and like all of the like human, not even, they don't have to be human, but all like the background NPCs that exist, some reason they get together to be a party and go adventure.
Oh, it's fabulous.
I would love that.
When we were playing one of the intro D&D things, like the first thing that I did with my kids was this introduction thing, the Phandalver.
If you know what. Okay.
Yeah, there was this random NPC in there, and they just like adopted this guy. And they took him with, they carried this NPC along with them the whole game. And like, and he's still like in our main thing, that's not the homebrew one. He's still there. Like, we're into some Waterdeep thing now. And he's still like, they just love the, you know, I have to be really careful to keep the NPCs like, to like give them reasons not, they collect them and they bring them along and they want them like in their crew, and they want, now they're trying to find a bard to take along with them to like write about their exploits. And it's NPCs are like, I have to really, it's hard with these kids, because they fall in love with everybody and they just want to take them along with us. We had we had like 15 people along with us at one point. It was nuts.
Oh man, that's a lot of hats for you to wear, because you've got
and they remember all the voices, and they're like, "You did that voice wrong," and it's like, I don't remember.
Shut up.
Yeah, exactly.
Roll for initiative. A golden dragon showed up.
Yeah, yeah.
I need to just get a dragon to kill them all off.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, look, it'll give them motivation to really go after and seek revenge if you just kill off all of their NPC friends in one fell swoop.
This is to teach you not to be attached to things in life. Yeah. I hope you've learned.
Exactly. Got to harden them up.
Yep. Well, great job on homebrew. Jason, 3 points. Laura, 2 points again. We're going to play our first game. It's time to play DIM, which is Do It Myself. So you're going to tell me if this is something that I, Nate, would do myself or not.
Ooh, fun.
All right, so Laura, we'll start with you on number one. Would I, Nate, replace a sink, faucet, and drain myself? Or would I have someone else do it?
You would do that yourself.
You're correct. Yes, I would. And I have several times.
Hey, yeah, awesome.
Yeah. I did two in this house myself already. And I will do the kitchen when it's time to replace the kitchen sink.
Nice. That's a good thing to know about.
No leaks, Jason. No leaks.
I mean, you can't turn it off, but there's no leaks.
Yeah, I mean, there is just it's a water feature now, but it's great. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
There you go.
All right, Jason, number two. Express a dog's anal gland. Is that something I would do myself?
You will totally pay someone to do that.
You're right. I would. I would pay someone to do that.
As a two-dog owner, I have no problem like trundling down to the vet and being like, I don't care. Here's the credit card. I'm not doing it. I don't need to have that relationship with my dog. Nope.
Have you ever considered it though? Have you ever had a moment where you're like, you know what? I could just put rubber gloves on, like middle of the pandemic. Like I could just slap gloves on and just do this.
Nope. They're going to be scooting until I get myself a vet appointment because I know.
I admit I have definitely considered it because I was like, I'll Google this and see how. I don't know.
you're like, oh, I could do that. Why on earth does the vet charge $130 just to do that? Hold on, let me go to YouTube. Oh my God, $130? I would pay them $200 to do that.
I'm honestly more concerned with doing something wrong because it's a very sensitive place to be poking around. And if you don't do it right, like I don't want to deal with the subsequent vet bill.
I don't want that look from my dogs.
Also
like
true.
In the future, like our relationship will change after that moment.
You just can't walk up behind like, them ever again.
I just can't. It's like, it's just going to get weird.
Yeah.
Like they'll be laying on the couch and like, maybe they'll like move a little bit and I'll give them this look of like, are you okay? And then they'll have this thing of like, please don't touch my ass.
You take the dogs out and you put the leash on and they just jog backwards the whole time looking at you. Like, don't even try to get behind me. I don't care if I'm walking.
We promised we wouldn't talk about this.
great. Laura, number three.
Yes.
Build a pair of wooden chairs from scratch. And I'm talking about getting some wood, milling it down, doing all the stuff. Is that something I'd do myself?
Yes. I like to imagine that you would do that. That would be fabulous.
Oh, man. I would like to imagine I would do it too, but I don't think I would. Woodworking is like my least favorite thing to do.
It's a scary one. That's a lot of commitment. And then like one little mess up and it's done. My dad does that. He almost cut his finger off one time. So
one of our family friends when I was growing up had only like three fingers left on both like three fingers between both hands because he had like table sawed himself. And
no.
And also.
And
like,
then again?
I think it's complicated. I also don't think I have the temperament to make the mistake. Like if I cut just like that quarter inch wrong and my chair now just wobbles forever, unless I take the entire thing apart and start over, I don't think I would do it. I think I would give up.
Yeah.
And and there are people who are just so precise and I can do that, but I just only with some things. It's very weird. Like I can hang a shelf with the best of them. But constructing a chair from scratch, as much as I would like love to do it, it would be an ugly chair. And I would be like, yay, I did this. Now, where's a fireplace?
it's very precise.
Father-in-law has tens of thousands of dollars of woodworking equipment, like a full-on like lathe and like a hood thing that you can like, that's
my dad too.
Vacuums and everything like that.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And he doesn't use it or do anything with it.
Oh, he should at least make baseball bats for everyone. A lathe will do that in a couple of minutes.
I love lathes. They're like my favorite favorite woodworking thing. They're just so fun.
It's so cool to watch.
They're really neat to watch. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was actually
is crazy.
Like shop in high school. That was the most fun thing for me was learning how to use the lathe and then seeing what the lathe did. I never did it as well as there was one kid, Terry, who in my high school, who he did the most elaborate stuff. Like he carved one of those, like a table leg that had like a ball in a cage in the middle of it with the lathe and everything. And like, he was the type of person who would make this chair.
Wow.
Not me.
Yeah.
All right. Jason, number four, alter shirts and pants. Is that something I would do or something I just pay somebody to do?
Nah, you just pay someone to do it.
I actually will do this myself. I have altered lots of my own clothing. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Once you've got the one stitch, and I don't even know the name of it because I don't bother knowing the specifics of things. But sure. I've altered lots of shirts where you know the sleeves are too baggy or the sides are too baggy. Just take them in a little bit on the insides. You just do like a nice back and forth stitch in there. Take it in a little bit. Done the same thing with pant legs. It's really not hard to do. And it saved me a lot of money in college because I'd just go and like, I would buy like, well, my life narrative is that I would buy medium clothing when I was in high school because that was the size of clothing my dad bought. And I sort of just, I don't know. I think I just decided that's how you bought clothes. You just get, well, he's an adult, so I'll buy what he wears as well. And I was like, these are all way baggier than the rest of the people I know. So I was like, oh, well, here, I can take them in. And so I did.
humble brag the fact that when you were in college that a medium was too baggy for you?
I mean,
screw you, little man. But
it's not like I was. It's not like I was a you know, I wasn't like a muscular kickboxer type small.
Well, see, growing up, I just thought everybody had the same metabolism that I had, that I could eat 4 burritos and not even gain a pound.
I only camped out at the Mongolian barbecue place for 8 hours twice.
Twice.
It was all you can eat, and you just get there. Yeah. That's what.
I can see altering pants. I mean, the way that I would kind of alter pants, honestly, like jeans, is like I would just have really big cuffs. That's it. I'm just rolling them up because I don't get that's it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, and I usually just roll mine up anyway. I cuff my pants as it is, so that's easy. Yeah. It's like when you can take them in on the side a little bit, and you can with some pants. It's like it's easier to do with slacks than it is with jeans. Jeans are a wild card.
I've never altered clothing. I've sewn like entire costumes for my children for Halloween, but I've never altered anything, which is super weird now that I think about it. I've never done that.
I'm surprised because yeah, that means you just like you make a costume and if it's too big, you just throw it away and make a smaller one.
Yeah.
Alter the costumes, but I mean, I've never teasing.
She's got this room in her house that no one's allowed to go into because it's just like this shame closet of all these like missized. Ironically, like all of them are mediums and all of them are baggy.
Right, so. They're just all yeah. I like the creepier version where Laura just has a bunch of Halloween costumes that are too big and she just takes the kids in there once in a while and says, "You'll grow into these."
You better behave or you'll end up like your older sister.
Oh, geez. See, this is why we have to let kids be weird, because if not, they turn into us. So yeah, great job. You're each getting 1 point on do it myself. Now we're going to start round number 3. So Jason, do you have a vague idea about a sourdough starter?
Yes. So I've heard like these things are like passed down almost as family heirlooms. It's like that bit of that's that sourdough yeast or this glob or whatever that's in like a mason jar that your grandmother originally started to basically make sourdough bread. Now, as a note, I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, so sourdough. And yeah, that's what it is. Like that's how you get sourdough bread. It's like this thing, but it's like heirloom. It's like, you know, Grandma Betty back during the Depression left some water and yeast out in the backyard and it became our starter and we call it Reginald. And it's and it just gets passed down for like generation after generation. And it's a little bit, you just use a little bit of it to start your sourdough loaf.
Very good. Very good. Anything to add, Laura?
Yeah, I have a friend who she's been doing this for years, and every so often she'll give me a little bit of starter and I just kill it. I just let it die. I don't take care of it. I always intend to, cause I like the idea of it, but I cannot do it. And I've killed it 3 times and I've never made a loaf of bread with it. And I think at some point she just like stopped offering cause she knew how it was going to end.
Stop killing my children, Laura. Stop it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think kind of that's sort of how she feels. I think it's not cool. I'm not a good sourdough mother. I think the story here.
So here in San Francisco, it's famous. It's a Boudin bakery, which is like where sourdough was like invented or something like that. And it's here in the city. They have the bakery and you can go there. And of course it's right there by the wharf. So it's like overpriced crappy clam chowder. And you get to like walk by a window and watching people who are massively underpaid, like make bread like inches away from machinery that will clearly lop their hands off. But I think like there's a story of like, they're still using the original starter. From like the 1800s or something. The only thing, whenever I hear that, I go, thank God they have to bake it in an oven to kill whatever this is. Cause I'm just imagining this like Lovecraftian kind of thing in a jar that's just sitting there, and it bubbles a little bit, and because it's so old and everything, when you open it up, it says something either racist or anti-Semitic. Because, so, yeah,
you're talking about summoning Surdoth the Unseeing,
yes,
who comes
exactly.
from the beyond to bestow bread and madness upon the populace.
Right. Or anyone born before 1950 in the Midwest. You know, same thing. You know, there you go.
So what I think is interesting is, like, over the pandemic, a lot of my friends got into baking bread, and the sourdough thing entered my social media purview to the extent where I feel like sourdough starters are the Tamagotchi of our generation now. It's like, I got to keep this thing alive. I'm going to get something out of it. It's not the satisfaction of, like, keeping a robot pet alive, but it is going to be like, I keep a thing alive, and you're eating the progeny.
You slowly consume it. It's like Laura, your children. It's like raising your children, but you're slowly consuming them.
Yeah.
Like bit by bit.
So yeah, you're just like raising a children. Finger. Yeah.
Yeah. So like children.
Yeah.
But you use them to make other children. It's like, okay, I'm just gonna need your pinky toe because you're gonna have a brother.
Yeah. You know, that I mean that's how thing. That's how it's very biblical. It's how people were made, right? Or how Eve was made.
The rib, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's
how it's done. Yeah.
Oh, and fuck social media, like a year and a half ago, where it was just like nothing but, like, you know, I'm making sourdough and I'm doing this. And it's like, no, you're not. No, you're not. I guarantee you, you're not. are you doing it now? Have you opened a bakery? Have you decided to really, really, really kind of like be that, like, giving back to the earth and everything like that? Oh, no. You actually threw everything away when you realized you only got 49 likes. So you said, fuck this, I'm done.
Plus, rocking in the fetal position in the corner. Always.
I made bread today, by the way. We've been making bread for like about a week now. Every day we make a loaf of bread. And I almost posted a picture of it a few days now on social media, but I didn't.
See, and I'm into it. Like, my wife made bread last or 2 weeks ago, and it was good. And I would actually like to try making more, because it is kind of nice to just have different kinds of ways of doing it.
Yeah.
Cooking is fun. But it is like there's this weird cultural obsession with the sourdough thing.
It doesn't need its own Instagram account. It does not need its own Instagram account.
I try really hard not to ever. Something about putting pictures of your food on social media, or like what you've made or what you're eating, is just, I can't.
At least until we crack a social media platform that allows for smelling. Like, I'm totally down if we get to a VR point where I can log in and be like, oh fuck, what you bake smells awesome, and I'm so glad I experienced this. But right now it's it's all just about how good of a photographer you are.
Yep. That's not how it's going to be. Having smell vision, you know, that's not how it's going to be.
I know.
Because the moment that people get involved with that in the metaverse, you know, it's not going to be like, I want to spread, like, you know, compassion and love and joy. It is, how many people can I emotionally scar in the next 5 minutes?
Yeah. I mean, for profit, though.
For profit.
Yeah.
Well, that's how I become an influencer.
They need to be emotionally scarred enough to buy the thing that I want to sell. So just so you both know, I'm looking at eBay right now. And so there's a 233-year-old verified Heritage San Francisco sourdough starter on here for $5.49. There are dozens of sourdough starters anywhere between $5 and $10 that you can get. Lots of them that are San Francisco heritage ones, which is interesting to me.
Wow.
But yeah, it's like a big thing. I'm almost a little curious to just, for $5, why not try it, make some bread.
Yeah.
If I can keep it alive, great. If I don't, if I get one loaf of bread out of it, guess
five
what?
Bucks.
A loaf of sourdough is going to cost me $5 anyway. So, you know, it could be worth it.
Wow.
So yeah, great job. I'm going to give each 2 points on that sourdough starter. And round number four, Laura. Do you have a vague idea about biodynamic gardening? Biodynamic gardening.
Is that the one where is that the one that's like very respectful of the soil? Very like, don't put any like chemicals or anything in, and very kind of make a little ecosystem in your backyard. it's my gardening philosophy, but I don't know what it's called, if that's what you're talking about.
So yeah, you're on absolutely the right track. Go ahead and elaborate a little bit on this ecosystem you're making.
Planting plants that work well together, that like not just like little monocultures here and there, like just like things that work together to make a sustainable system, essentially, is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, very good. Jason, anything to add on biodynamic gardening?
I just think it's a fancy term of what Laura ever said. It's like plant stuff that won't kill each other. And then the goal is that you don't have to go out there and actually deal with it.
It takes care of itself.
It's kind of like a pet rock, but you know, it's your backyard garden. Yeah.
Yeah. So biodynamic gardening is specifically, it's like organic gardening, but it includes concepts drawn from the ideas of Rudolf Steiner, who I think you in California would be familiar with RSF, the Rudolf Steiner Foundation, which is a lot of sustainability stuff.
That guy. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he did things. Yeah.
I know that name.
Man,
you know him
boy.
Well. You clearly know
my
him
boy.
Well. But yeah. So basically the ideas are that it treats soil fertility, plant growth, and livestock care as ecologically interrelated.
So
basically you're saying like, hey, if I'm going to raise goats, we're going to use the goat manure to fertilize the soil, and we're going to have plants here that thrive off of this interconnection, right? So you're going to have plants that like, hey, the goats can eat these once they've borne fruit or crop and eat them back and whatever else. It's a very cool idea. And it turns out when you look at a world map of where it happens, it's pretty much just Europe and Africa where it happens. The United States has none of it at all because we're good at stuff. So
everything you describe is basically nature.
Yeah, it's like doing nature. I mean, it's just gardening with purpose. So you acknowledge that nature exists, and then you go, well, how do I make the thing? How do I make nature produce what I want without breaking nature? And of course, in this country, historically, we break everything because that's the only way.
It's so gross.
We have to win.
I hate us so much. Yeah.
Hey, you gotta show dominance. You gotta show dominance. I mean, that's what you do. How you do it?
I think my neighbors must hate us so much because that's how I have a huge veggie garden, and that's my philosophy. I was actually, I don't have any animals. I don't have any goats or anything, but yesterday I was searching for goats. I was looking online for how much it costs to have a goat.
Why would your neighbors hate you that you have a veggie garden?
Because they have like, you know, it's the very American, maybe it's a particularly Midwest thing. I feel like in your neck of the woods,
are you using in your garden?
Some.
Oh, there you go.
It doesn't smell though. It's nothing that they would be able to smell. Like once you put it in, once you incorporate it into the soil, that's not why. It's not like, it's like these are people who all have like super fertilized grass, and they have somebody else come and like trim all their hedges to be perfect, and nature is not their yards are not nature. Like you've got to fight that out of there. Like no weed, my milkweeds that I have in my yard are probably like blowing into their yards and infecting their whole neighborhood with all
you better be careful. I mean, I feel there are news stories out there of people like burning their neighbors' houses down because you didn't mow your yard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we got a notice on our we got a notice when we had just moved into our house, and I was pregnant, like 8 months pregnant or something, and my husband was traveling for work, and we got this notice on our door, like, but from the county saying we had to mow our lawn, and we didn't have a lawnmower then. We had to like figure out how I, 8 months pregnant with like no lawnmower, could like hire a lawn service when they were backed up like months out for new people or whatever. It was crazy. My neighborhood is insane, and we don't even have a neighborhood association. Like the neighborhood behind me, we're like this little island between two different neighborhoods with neighborhood associations. But
so
somehow somebody must have told on me. It was the county. I think somebody like turned us in for something because our grass was too long.
That is white collar crime.
It was trash.
Only white people.
Yeah, no, literally, that's just white people. Yeah. It's not, there's no collars involved. It's just who has that kind of time to care? It would be one thing to be like, I mean, okay, look, if there was like a tiger in tall grass on your front lawn, it's like, hey, this is getting out of hand. That's one thing. But if it's like, hey, look, there's grass, like, yeah, the idea that we're supposed to just have these manicured sort of old English style, like we've conquered this space and therefore it is pristine and totally
the
wasteful.
The history of lawns is like, it's a very elitist, like just disgusting thing. It's the actual history of having a big, perfect green, nothing lawn is not a good history.
Oh yeah. Well, in like the way Hank Hill is depicted on King of the Hill, about his lawn and his obsession with it is, I think, fairly common with a lot of people that they are like, hey, I got to go out and mow it every Saturday. I'm going to trim the like, trimming with like mustache shears and stuff and like, and being very upset.
Somebody who lives down a few houses from us, there's a person who goes out with the scissors. He'll be out there with scissors.
Yeah.
Like making sure his grass is even.
We got to get that guy a sourdough starter.
Someone needs to check his crawl space.
It's true.
And Laura, to answer your question, like, what do you do when you're 8 months pregnant and your husband is traveling and you don't have a lawnmower and like, you know, how you take care of it? Well, the first thing that you need to do is you need to get yourself a little Raspberry Pi board.
Yeah.
And a soldering iron.
I need a goat. That's what I need.
A goat.
It's true. A goat will do all the mowing you want.
Yeah.
My wife has brought up the fact of like, why don't we get a goat? They could like live in the backyard and they could keep it down and everything. Like I said, our dogs would go insane. One of them would just quit. One of them literally would just quit and be like, listen, I was the only one here for a while. You brought this other one in. I'm not talking about this. Oh, now you're bringing in a goat. I'm out. She'd pack a little suitcase, put a little hat on and be like waiting on the corner for Uber. She's like, out. Yeah.
But that's an Instagram account, my friend.
It is. It's a total Instagram account.
So yeah, great job on biodynamic gardening. Laura, 2 points. Jason, 1 point. We're gonna play our second game. It's time to play I See What You Did There.
Nice.
Everybody loves this game. It's everybody's favorite game except the people who are playing it. So question number one, Laura. Stick this living DIY legend with Sting's former drummer instead of her usual bud, Snoop. So give me a before and after.
Well, I know it's Martha Stewart.
Yeah, you got the Martha Stewart part. So Sting's former drummer.
Is he a well-known drummer? Is he like one of those?
I mean, people would know his last name. Huh. Yeah. He played with Sting in the Police.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. No,
okay. I'm going to give you a point for the Martha Stewart part because I think Jason's going to get the other half.
Yes, Martha Stewart Copeland.
You are correct. Yeah. Martha Stewart Copeland. Yeah.
All I know is Aaron Copeland, but that's not the right Copeland.
Yeah, when Sting wanted to break up the Police, he said, hey, I'm just gonna go off and I'm gonna like do my own solo album. Don't worry, I'll be back. And like Stewart Copeland still sitting by the phone waiting for the call. Yeah.
Which is sad. Sad for him.
Yes.
So great job. Yeah, you both got a point on that because you both got parts of it. Okay. Number two, Jason, if this fixer upper host who's right off the old block took the high ground like Obi-Wan, you might say this.
I have no idea. I'm trying to think. I mean, no, I got nothing. I can't even get either one. Damn it. No.
Okay.
I mean, the only fixer up like from the block.
Yeah. Yeah. So something.
No.
Something off the old block. This fixer-upper host who's right off the old block, if they took the high ground like Obi-Wan, you might say this.
It's Chip something.
It is Chip something. That's for sure.
I don't know. All right. I know. Chip something. I don't know.
Chip something. Laura, do you have a guess?
No. No. I have no idea.
All right. I'm going to give Jason a point for Chip. The answer I was looking for is Chip gains the upper hand.
Oh, you're going off of the Star Wars movies that were never made. because I don't count those three. Like, not even a little.
The third one is the best of the three, which is to say it's still not good, but at least it's like almost good at points. I know. All right, number three, Laura, shrink down. This venerable French cooking teacher and former U.S. intelligence researcher to doll size, then possess her with the soul of a serial killer, and you get.
Wow. I'm sorry. Can you say it again?
Yeah. So you're going to shrink down this venerable French cooking teacher and U.S. intelligence researcher to the size of a doll. Then you're going to possess her with the soul of a serial killer to get this.
I have no idea. I'm so bad at this game.
Do you know any French cooking teachers who might be famous?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Somebody current?
Probably not. I'll say not current. Yeah.
I'm gonna guess Julia Child.
Okay.
You got that. She's the only female famous cook I can think of, honestly.
Great. Yeah, you got that. So then you just
have it to, is Julia Child. Okay.
You just gotta shrink her down to doll size and possess her with the soul of a serial killer to get the second half of the answer.
I don't know. No, I don't know.
All right. I'm gonna give you a point for Julia Child. Jason, do you have a guess on this?
It's Julia Child's play.
It is Julia Child's play. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Julia Child's play. Another adorable tiny redhead on a murderous rampage.
Yet again.
All right. Number four, Jason. This foul idiom for getting organized has nothing to do with stuffing Dirty Jobs 9-season host.
It's basically get your ducks in a mic row.
Yeah, it's get your ducks in a mic row.
Okay,
very good. Good. Very
ducks
good.
In a mic row. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yep. Very good.
It's a real shame. I used to, like, I would watch his shows because I really, really liked the fact of, like, here is a guy who he flat out, you know, like, he's conservative, Republican, and everything like that. But he was very, very much like, there are so many of, like, the quote unquote real Americans that the GOP always talks about, like, the real blue collar workers and all the, like, the shit jobs that they do and everything like that. I love the fact that he would go out there and basically give them a spotlight to go like, hey, here's the reason why your house isn't currently filled with shit, because these are people, your sewer technicians and things like that. But then, like, a few years ago, he just went off the deep end and went like uber, like, conservative kind of thing. And it's like, oh,
he went into the whole everybody's soft now thing. And it's like, no, not everybody's soft. People just disagree with you about politics. And it doesn't change the fact that, like,
yeah.
It's so sad when people do that. Like when J.K. Rowling in the bathrooms, that broke my heart.
Yeah, I know.
It's just so sad when people turn evil.
It really is. Because they don't have to. Like, especially J.K. Rowling could have just not said anything for the rest of her life. And everybody would have
just
loved everything.
She could just, like, shut up about this. Yeah.
Oh, no. Instead, she decides to double down. She doubled down.
It's crazy. Yeah. And it makes me so sad.
Well, it was like the Jon Stewart in his Apple Plus, Apple TV thing that he's doing right now. He did a little bit about, like, J.K. Rowling and everything, and specifically reading about, like, the Harry Potter books. And he's sitting there and he's reading about, it's like, oh, you know, in the Harry Potter books, when they start talking about Gringotts Bank, and it's like, oh, you know, little goblins that run this wizard global bank. And he's like, oh, okay, J.K.
Yeah.
Okay. You mean the Jews? It's like, and he had an intern, but somebody who works on his show and everything, who's way younger than him, was like, the guy was sitting there going like, well, I don't know. And like, the more and more you're talking about it, this poor kid is basically sitting there going like, oh my God, it is.
Now I'm thinking about it.
He goes, and in the movies, oh my God, the movies. And it's like, yeah, it's been there the whole time.
Yeah.
Been there the whole time. She's just.
It's really
sad.
But I
think she's actually, honestly, I think it is a really kind of good talking point of having the conversation. And my wife's a professional artist. So, like, I have no dog in this fight of, can you divorce the artist from their art?
Right.
I'm very capable of that because I was just talking to my husband a while ago about how, like, I cannot read a book by any man written, or any straight man at least, written, I don't know, more than 5 years ago without having to, the depictions of women are going to be trash, and you just have to overlook that. You just have to, like, there's just, there are so many people who I adore in every other way, and they're going to be sexist, or they're just going to have these, like, unthinking racist things if you're going back, like, 100 years or whatever, especially.
Yeah.
And you just have to kind of, I'm trying to do this with Harry Potter because my kids love Harry Potter, and we're all, like, kind of jointly trying to do this, like, separate the, especially when it's somebody, when it's like a current thing, and it's like they've just, like, just they just throw this at you, this, like, hey, guess what, I hate this group of people and I'm awful.
I mean, Harry Potter movie, the first Harry Potter movie came out 20 years ago. It's only been 20 years. Like, with my whole thing, I love old sci-fi horror, that kind of stuff. I'm a huge H.P. Lovecraft fan. Love his writing.
Yes, good example.
Arguably one of the most racist human beings on the planet at the time. And that's the thing. And I know, it's like, this is why it's like, I don't even get into conversations about this, because it's the whole thing of, like, yeah, as a middle-aged, well-educated white guy, it's very easy for me to sit there and go, like, yeah, he was racist, but look at the time period. Right, and it's almost like bordering on, like, making excuses.
Well,
and
he's got no excuse.
There's
no
nothing.
Excuse.
There's nothing. Mm-mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's this, I think it's also just that we lose some of our heroes, some of our, some of the people we like. Well, I think that's part of the thing, right? It's like the essence of social media reality is we're constantly meeting our heroes. So there's no way that you can't hold anybody in high esteem unless they completely detach themselves from the apparatus of communication that is so just, you know, pervasive.
Look what happened with Patton Oswalt recently. Mm. And I'm sorry, I am not a Dave Chappelle fan. I thought, okay, Chappelle's show, I thought he was really, really brilliant because how he was calling out and mocking, making fun of racism and making fun of us stupid ass white guys. I thought it was great. Yeah. But just no, I cannot support him. And look at like Patton Oswalt, where it was the whole thing of, like, yeah, I met my idol and everything like that. And it was like virtual pitchforks and torches. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is I don't know. It's just almost not worth using it to share anything of realness because we're just not built for that. Like the idea would be we can do this show, the three of us. Imagine if there were 50,000 people in here all vying to talk at the same time and no one would ever get anything done. And we would be at each other's throats over the most minor of misunderstandings and inconveniences and thing. And then people dig in, right? Like I think that's the thing that's interesting with Rowling is it's like, maybe if she doesn't say anything and it goes undiscussed, she doesn't feel required to dig in on her position.
Yeah.
You know, it's that weird thing where it's just like, it's sort of, we're constantly reaffirming our own biases by getting into arguments where somebody says, well, you're incorrect. And then you go, well, I can't be because I'm very smart. And it's like, well, that doesn't really matter. Like,
no.
Yeah.
And everybody's entitled to have, like, we should be able to have more thoughtful conversations than we're capable of having. But again, not in Twitter, not anywhere, but really in the spaces where real conversations happen. Like you have real conversations with your family, you have them with your friends.
Right.
You don't have real conversations on a national news panel show. What you have are very carefully curated conversations where they ask you questions that your PR people approved of before you went out there. So the idea that we've ever had a real public discourse is incorrect anyway. We've had just varying levels of fake public discourse. And then now it's like, oh, let's just do it for real without an editor, without a network, without any sort of censors or anything, and literally no culpability. And of course, it's going to blow everything up.
16 years ago, I was working for a little social network website that was before Facebook. You can figure out which one it was. And I was at a tech conference where I was on a panel. And of course, I'm the most popular one because I'm that guy. And they're like, oh, great. I won't go into detail because I don't want to derail everything. But it's like, I had an interaction, an unscripted interaction with an individual in the audience. By the time I got back to Los Angeles, I had a meeting with the vice president of corporate communications for our parent company, and really was chewed out for a half hour going, you're not allowed to ad lib.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
You're 100% correct. I mean, that's just how it is. J.K. Rowling's basically what she did was she walked into the middle of the party, farted, everyone noticed, and instead of her like quietly slinking away for a little bit so the party could kind of get back to its thing and then come back in like a half hour later, she decided to double down and went like, what are y'all going to do about it?
Yeah,
no, she dropped her pants and shat on the middle of the floor and like, oh, you think right. I farted? Well, look at this.
Oh,
yeah.
But that's the time we live in. So yeah, great job on I See What You Did There. 4 points for Jason, 2 points for Laura. And now from the makers of Pomme ou Pomme de Terre, it's La Chose Française Arbitraire. That's the arbitrary French thing. And the only thing that's French about it is the name. So we're going to do something a little different this time. Laura, I just want you to talk about beekeeping. And Jason, I want you to chime in with witty and contributing riffs when appropriate.
Lovely. All right. So, beekeeping. So the first thing you want to do, you want to get your boxes. If you want to save a lot of money, you can just get the pre-cut ones that you construct yourself.
Like and... two boxes or you can't really afford it, like just a dry cleaner bag with a hole in it. Is that okay?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
No, very specific for the bees, very specific bee boxes with like the little things you can like slide in and out to look at the honey that they're all putting on their honeycombs in there. So you put those together. You usually paint them white so that the sun doesn't soak up too much heat and overheat them.
I see.
Them
I
the
see.
Summer.
So they got to be white. They got to be white. I see how it is.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did beekeeping like originate in the South? Just out of curiosity, you know, with these white boxes and they can only be white, like what with the bees, like do the bees have to be white or?
So after you have your boxes, you get your bee, the queen comes, you like buy a queen separately sometimes, like if the bees that
so
you
now,
buy.
So now we're trafficking a female to build your colony. Okay. All right. Now we're buying people. Okay. All right.
And the females are the only ones who do any work for, you know, taking the, you know, they're the ones who do the work. The boys are just the ones. They're just there to mate with the queen and basically do nothing else. They don't fly. They do nothing. And so let's
so
see.
So South
the
Padre
bees.
Island, like during spring break. Okay. Nice.
Gross.
And then around the fall, if the bees haven't been poisoned by, you know, neighbors who spray pesticides, as my bees were this past summer, we lost a hive to pesticides. If they have survived, then you can take some honey from them. And if you're nice, you leave some honey for them. And if you're a mean beekeeper, you take all of their honey and just give them like sugar instead of the stuff
tiny
there,
little,
their hard-earned
tiny
honey.
Little eviction notices, tiny little eviction notices outside their hive.
Yeah.
Do they? They're going to make honey faster if you leave them honey, right? Because it's actually more nutrient rich. Because like sugar has no nutrient components, and like the honey has pollen, so it's got some organic stuff in there.
Yeah, there's like it's good for like people take it for allergies. They just eat it to eat local honey to stop local allergies from like local pollen because of whatever honey magic is going on there. But they certainly don't take sugar. So, and then, hopefully if you have winter weather-proofed, cold-proofed your hives.
You're weatherproofing.
For the winter, they'll hopefully, and this is when you cover the hives with black paper. So they're black for some of the year anyway.
Right. During the time of year where it really doesn't matter. So you can kind of ignore them and everything like that. So that's why you cover. Okay. I get it. I'm getting like a central theme of like only white people do beekeeping.
Untrue. There's a lot of beekeepers who there's like a lot of, no, that there's a, I watched a thing recently about these programs.
It'd be great.
No, so there's these separate things. There's like prisoners, ex-prisoners, and then also people from the army. And again, it's like a PTSD.
So those
thing.
Are green and
it's
khaki like people. To, green and khaki
yes,
people.
Yes, no. Exactly. Yes. So yeah, not all white people, but generally you go to a bee conference, as I've been to. And
oh my god, the after hours has white. To be insane there.
I've heard a lot of buzz.
Lots of mead. Lots of mead. super white. Super duper white. For just like the average people doing it without like being steered into some program after enduring some trauma as like a therapy thing.
I would think it's like, it's gotta, you probably have to do everything very slowly and deliberately, right? Like you're not gonna thrash around and do stuff fast with bees, even if they're friendly bees that are expecting you, because they're still gonna defend the hive. So yeah, really? what a cool meditative way to deal with trauma and stuff that you would say, hey, just put on this costume. Go. Do you wear like a beekeeper's suit? Do you have the whole thing with the hood, with the hooded hat?
Oh,
yeah. Jazz? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I am so allergic.
You realize that like honey is the only harvestable food that requires you to wear full body safety equipment, because where it comes from wants to kill you. like nobody is wearing a hazmat suit harvesting like asparagus because they're gonna die. They're not.
I mean, they are asparagus spears though, Jason, so it's really just a matter of most of the time when people do asparagus without armor on, they move laterally through the crop.
Totally.
But if you try to go straight down on it, you're gonna kill yourself.
Well, there you go.
Great job on La Chose Francais Arbitraire. That was very interesting. I've always thought about keeping bees myself.
But
I think
I'm
it would be really
these
cool.
Bee conferences.
You should. It's fabulous.
Yeah, no.
It's just lovely.
I mean, we have some in our neighborhood, actually. There's some people who are away. I know that they do, because when we've gone by, they have the hives in the backyard. They have a couple. They have like a couple little setups and everything like that. I'm just now picturing like these beekeeping conferences. Where it's like you said, it's like the whitest people in the world, and like during the day it's probably just like it's just PowerPoint presentation after PowerPoint presentation, but then at night, like after the bar closes, it just turns into this like Kubrickian kind of like David Fincher just orgy with costumes and wax and honey, and then the next morning no one's really making eye contact, and it's just like and then back to PowerPoint presentations.
Jason, you're just sitting at the bar with somebody, just sitting at the bar with somebody, and you slide the room key over and you say, you want to come up and play with my comb?
You want to pollinate?
You know I do. All right.
This is great. Exactly what happens. It's as if you've been there.
I've seen the Tumblr page. I know.
Great job on La Chose Francais Arbitraire. I'm going to give Laura 4 points and Jason 3 points. So we're going into the final topic. Jason is ahead by 2 right now, 17 to 15. So Laura, you're going to have first crack at this. Everything's going to hinge on it. It's pretty serious. It's pretty serious stuff.
It is.
So do you have a vague idea about this old house?
Oh my gosh. My dad watched that all the time, being a woodworker, as previously discussed. He watched This Old House so much. I soaked it up, like, you know, just by being in the same room a little bit. But Bob something or other. Bob.
Bob something or other. Yeah.
Bob something or other. He fixed up old houses, and I was trying to think of the theme song and I can't. I don't know. But I loved it. I really liked watching them fixing up the stuff.
Do you want to sing a version of the theme song? You might not remember the original one, but maybe you've got like a little a little improv you'd like to do for us.
Were there words?
Do you know the I don't, but I faintly remember it, and I'm gonna look it up and see if I can get
it. Oh, shoot. Yeah.
to play over the microphone.
Oh God.
I can't believe I can't think of it.
I don't remember this old house theme having so many expletives in it. Right? Wait, is it featuring 2 Chainz? What the hell? I don't remember any of that.
All right, we're gonna see if this works. We're gonna see if this is the correct answer.
Oh my God.
I don't know if it's gonna be, so get ready. This is it says it's this old house theme, song by Old House Playground.
Oh my God, this is gonna go so bad.
I think this is definitely right.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
No, this totally sounds like PBS in the 1980s. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's amazing.
Coming up next on NPR. Two Berkeley Trust Fund kids have rediscovered Tibetan throat music. Here's a 3-hour sample.
Yeah, very good. Anything else to add, Laura, about this old house?
Nope, I think that's about it. That's all I can really remember. Yeah.
All right.
Wow, theme song. That was fabulous.
Yeah.
Was that a saxophone? I couldn't tell.
It's a clarinet.
Oh, really?
I think so, yeah.
BS. It's PBS. That's the only instrument they have.
I played
they
clarinet,
have one clarinet
until my arthritis got me.
One for all of public broadcasts.
It's
just one. It's one
it's,
guy.
It was purchased by viewers like
person.
Us.
Yeah. I got a tote bag for it.
It's true. Which they could really buy several other instruments if they just stopped sending tote bags, but nah, that's fine.
Nah.
So I got to put my plastic bags in something.
Yes.
Jason, do you have anything to add about this old house?
Yes, it was the host was Bob Vila.
Bob Vila.
And it was, yep. I believe it was on like PBS. And it was him like renovating these old houses and everything like that. And I don't know if it's true, but I'm gonna say it was true. That the character of Al Borland from Tool Time with the whole like flannel and the mustache and everything was kind of based off of Bob Vila. Don't know if it's true, but I'm gonna say it is. But I do remember the big controversy because Bob Vila had like the beard mustache thing going on and like he shaved it off and like people literally stopped watching because they're like, what are you doing? But yeah, he was a contractor. He did old houses and everything like that. And that's Bob Vila. PBS. It was the precursor to like, you know, who's the guy? Ty Benning? He was, I mean, basically this old house was like the grandfather, the beginning of the, we're going to like HGTV and all that kind of like, we're going to fix your house and all that kind of stuff. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, this is the tragedy of capitalism that like the government didn't go, oh, hey, I think we've got something. Why don't we blow up PBS and make this really awesome self-sustaining entity that just does home improvement stuff. But instead, there's like 17 channels that all do it not as well as this. Because it's interesting, right? Like this old house was the equivalent of like watching a YouTube video of how to plane a door or how am I going to patch a plaster wall? And he would just go, hey, you go buy these things. And it was that very nice PBS, like confident, quiet voice.
And there were no cutaways. Mm-hmm. There's no cutaways. Like literally you would sit there and like one episode is him like picking out the right wood screws. And it was just like, like any other, like this day and age, honestly, you know, Grandpa X is going to tell you a story, you know, before like that wouldn't fly now. Like literally you'd watch a half hour of a guy telling you like, well, this is how you plane a door so you can close it and would like real time do it.
Yeah.
And it was insanity because you could just slowly watch Bob Vila like spiral into madness as he's doing all of this.
Or the opposite.
One more person. If you had one more person say, hey, I want a farmhouse sink with a tile backsplash, he was going to just fucking lose it and go on a killing spree.
That's fair. haven't we all reached that point by now? It's like, come on, everybody's kitchen has Subway tile in it. What are you trying to do?
Yeah, come on. Yeah.
Seriously. I know. I like it too, but come on. We can come up with something different.
There you go. Yeah.
What about a treated wood backsplash? That could be different and exciting, and you could be at the head of a trend, and you don't even have to post it on Instagram. Yeah, great job. This Old House was also one of my favorite shows to watch on like a Sunday afternoon, because you could just put it on PBS, and it seemed like it was on. It was like that and Doctor Who reruns were just on perpetually in my childhood, where you go to PBS and it was either him or it was the Doctor Who with the long scarf, whose name I can't remember.
Tom Baker.
Yeah. So just fantastic. I'm going to give Laura 3 points and Jason 2 points. And that means that this week with 19 points, Jason is the winner.
Episode.
Congratulations. I'm not hurt at all. I'm not sad. I'm not gonna cry.
Will your bees comfort you? No, wait, they won't.
No,
they will kill
they
you.
Can't.
They will
not this
sting
time of
you.
Year.
Yeah, they're cold.
They'll do nothing this time of year.
They'll do nothing.
They're sleeping.
Yeah, there's hopefully they're not. They're probably dying, honestly. Oh, probably
that's
dying.
That's a great
this
way to end an
weird,
episode.
This is a weird winter. A lot of highs and lows, and they're probably like thinking it's time to wake up, and then it blasts them with cold. They're probably gonna die. So.
Oh, Laura, it's like you're saying there's something wrong with our climate.
No,
I mean
climate change isn't real.
Yeah. It's not
that's just,
real.
That's just
drill,
the
baby,
Democrats.
Drill.
Yeah.
Listen. God put dinosaurs in the ground so we could have oil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't forget that.
Yep. Never. That's the only science I believe.
The only science I need.
Science of finders keepers.
First. That's right.
Jason, anything you want to plug?
So again, my wife is a professional artist. So if you get an opportunity, go to her website, astrangechildcreations.com. She actually has a showing here in the Bay Area at one of the amazing breweries here in the Bay, the Alameda Island Brewing Company. So if you have any listeners in the Bay Area, go check them out. They're right there in Alameda. They're awesome. They're such good people. They're one of the ones that survived the pandemic. So, you know, the DIY thing about brewing beer, they're amazing. So go check them out. Just, it may feel like we're turning a corner with everything happening in the world, but don't get comfy. Mm-hmm. Keep being smart. Keep being sane. Keep being kind.
Yes.
Because I think we really, really need that now more than ever, is let's just be kind to each other. I mean, I have a notebook filled of people that eventually I will get back at. But not now. Not now.
How Nixon-esque.
Very much so. I sit right by my non-existent fireplace, and I just sit there and ponder and just keep adding names. But not now. We need honestly, I mean, we need kindness, because this is at the period where we get comfortable and it just blows up again. So be kind, be smart, be vaccinated, support your local artists, support your local people. Support your tribe. That's it.
Support the bees.
I mean, they're assholes. Yeah. So
we need them. We need them, Jason. There won't be anything without them.
No. I'm sorry. Wasps. Wasps are assholes.
Yeah, the wasps can get out of here.
And if Laura, and I would also like to plug, if Laura has a book or a new book or is writing a book, it's like, buy her stuff. She's awesome.
Yeah, she really is. She really is.
Yeah, my birthday's in a few days, and it's a really good present for me.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Yes. Anybody who wants to get me a present, buy my books, review my books.
Yes.
That's an even better present.
That is the best birthday gift. Somebody to say, hey, I consumed this, and I'm going to take the 30 seconds it requires to give it 5 stars and say something nice.
Yep, totally. Yeah. So I don't have any like recent books, but I do have my most recent was How to Break an Evil Curse. That's the first in my fantasy series. The second one is coming out next Christmas, and I've got my novella Come Back to the Swamp and Grim Bargo, published by Nate's Small Press Space Boy Books. And I also have two. Oh, no, I have three. I have okay. So there's a. I have two anthologies that are published. I mean, I've contributed to two anthologies that Black Spot Books has put out. They're like holiday winter themed stuff. And then there's one through Space Boy Books that is called The Future Will Be Written by Robots, which I edited and have a story in. And Nate has a story in there. And a lot of the Space Boy writers have stories in there. And I'm currently writing a kind of ghost. It's like a story about this. I don't, maybe I talked about this last time. I don't remember. But it's about these two people, these two ladies, they were friends in, like, all through their lives. They were best friends. She died. She comes back as a ghost. They decide to go scam people. Like, she'll haunt the house. Her friend will come and banish the ghost and make money off of people by fake hauntings. And so that's the, I'm currently working on that. And I think that comes out in 2023. So that's nice. All the stuff I'm doing. Yeah.
That's a lot of stuff, and that's awesome. And yeah.
A lot of stuff. Yeah.
Thank you both so much for doing the show again. It's always fun to have you on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Laura, Nate, it's great to see you guys after the holidays.
Absolutely. Yes, right. Really, we made it through another year together. Doing this. Yeah,
everything's fine now.
Is absolutely fine okay. Now.
It's great.
Nothing to worry about. We're doing great.
We're all good. Yeah, it's great. Fresh start.
Listeners, if you like this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. That really helps us out. You can also check out other podcasts that we make, including Streets of Mage, which is our Dungeons and Dragons actual play podcast that I host and DM. We also have a couple of other shows that cover the Nuggets and Sex and the City. They're sort of on hiatus, but I'm sure they'll come back at some point. So, you know, dig through the archives, do as you will. If you like our theme song, check out the music of Michael J. O'Connor. It's michaeljoconnor.bandcamp.com. And I'll just second, like, let's just be as good as we can be as people, as kind as we can be, as thoughtful as we can be. There's going to be plenty of time to be upset at people, I guess. Like, we've been doing that for a while. It's kind of tired. So let's be good. Let's be nice. Let's be genuine and protect each other, because we're all in this together, whether we think we are or not, whether we like it or not. We all have to sail the same ship. And for God's sakes, take care of the bees. Won't somebody please think of the bees?
Exactly.
Fuck those wasps.
Yes, fuck those wasps. We have all had a vague idea about DIY this week, and that is a good thing, because the devil needs assembly, and you don't have enough of the number 16 wrench screws to put them together. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Toodaloo.
Vague Idea is written and produced by me, Nate Rebolia, with Shannon Page, and sometimes John Peros. Information about topics often come from Wikipedia, so hey, why not donate a bit to that? Sound effects are Creative Commons public domain. If you like this podcast, tell a few people, and subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. And if you happen to like reading science fiction, check out the small press I started with my friend Sean Brokowski. You can find Space Boy Books at readspaceboy.com.